Hi, Jan.
Nice to have you back.
Good to be with you.
We'll give you your contact information. Just please respond to some of the things I've just said.
Well, I agree with you entirely. Our country has had its back to the wall, unfortunately, and I think a lot of decent congressmen felt that same pressure. I think our options right now are down to either having a bit of a slower and more drawn-out crisis and financial collapse or a more sudden collapse. And I think a lot of the congressmen and women felt that by passing this agreement that it would buy us some time. I think most of them understand at this point the severity of the situation and that what we're witnessing right now is just the beginning. I do believe there are going to be other banks going down over the next few weeks and months. And so this current agreement that they came to for $700 billion in aid just deals with the current situation at hand. It doesn't really deal a whole lot with things yet to come. And I think also it's important for the listeners to understand that there are very powerful people who have been pushing an agenda for many years, being a global system of finance and government, and to introduce a whole new system with a new currency. The old system has to first, I guess you could say, crash. It has to get bad enough that the American people are willing to accept something new. And I believe this began in the last few weeks in a frontal assault type of way. What I don't know is how long it will take for us to get to that point. You know, it could be within a couple of months. It could be within a couple of years. But I do believe that ultimately we're going to end up with some form of regionalization where you have perhaps Canada, Mexico, the United States coming together in an agreement similar to what the European Union has right now. And I know there are efforts going on all around the world, South America. The countries are coming together. They're talking about having their own currency down there. Five of the Arab countries, including Saudi Arabia and United Arab Emirates and Kuwait, are moving in the same direction. So it's nothing new. I mean, for people who've been reading our materials, they've been warned about this for years to come. But still, it's somewhat stunning to see it unfold so quickly in front of our eyes.
Yeah, I think it would have to take something catastrophic, and of course, I have always said that if something's going to affect Americans, it has to affect every single solitary one of them, and an earthquake does not. It can shake a nation up. A 9/11 can shake a nation up for a few months to a year or two or three. But the thing that affects every human being, of course, is the economy. And I'm curious about these regionalistic efforts that eventually could blend into a one-world effort. But I think that an issue like the failing economy possibly could be enough of an impetus to put this whole thing together, and that is some form of regionalism that will then blend into the one world. Now, I was commenting earlier, Gary, about the Washington Times blatantly doing an editorial on a coming one world, well, globalism is what they call it, same thing, one world system. And then there's a note from Reuters coming out of Beijing basically saying the same thing, threatened by a financial tsunami. The world, this is coming out of Beijing now, written by Reuters, the world must consider building a financial order no longer dependent on the United States, a leading Chinese state newspaper said on Wednesday. The commentary in the overseas edition of the People's Daily said the collapse of Lehman Brothers Holdings may augur an even larger impending global financial tsunami, and then they end, the world urgently needs to create a diversified currency and financial system in fair and just financial order that is not dependent on the United States. Here we see there's a foreshadowing here of the diminishing of America.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, America has we've been in a unique situation the last 30 or 40 years because we have had many people taking a stand against globalization and world government. probably more than any country in the world on a per capita basis. In fact, there's no doubt in my mind about that. Yet at the same time, our country has been guilty of putting many of the pieces in place in order to eventually have a new world order. It's been our satellite technology, banking development, so forth, that put a lot of the pieces in place. So you have a lot of the bad and worst both represented in the same country. But we have definitely been forewarned and have had an opportunity to prepare both physically and spiritually for what may be lying ahead. But when you see foreign powers now coming out openly calling for world government, you know that the main effort isn't too far behind. And again, it really comes down to simply the timing of it all. I do believe this is the beginning of the final push, and I think people would be amazed at how quickly things begin falling in place the rest of the way. Something else I want to point out.
Our
government, for one thing, is practically broke itself. So to be able to help anybody, they have to borrow the money somewhere else or print the new or print more money for the time being, eventually perhaps a new currency. But right now the Chinese and the Arabs are the biggest source for our bailouts. Not only the government, but also some of the companies that are hurting right now. Morgan Stanley, a lot of people are not aware of this, but the Chinese already own 9% of Morgan Stanley, and last week Mitsubishi of Japan came in and purchased another 10 to 20% of that organization. So what is taking place is a lot of foreigners that do have deep pockets are able to come in and really have a bonanza here, take over U.S. companies for pennies on the dollar. And what they are not taking over, the U.S. government is taking over. You know, by jumping in with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, that puts the government strongly in charge of the mortgage industry. We see the same thing with the government jumping in to bail out AIG, so they've got a huge interest now in the insurance industry. Then there'll be universal health care of some sort, so it'll take a lot of our the government will have a lot of influence in the healthcare industry. So we see a government that in some ways is becoming more powerful as far as their reach goes, but yet they're going to be broke. And when you put that together, it sows the seeds of socialism. And I think that stage is being set. And, you know, Jan, I know you're aware of this. My parents came from Europe. I'm a first-generation immigrant. And my father fled from the Nazis and communists in Croatia toward the end of the war, and they paid the price for everything that Hitler did, and that not enough German people took a stand on that and never thought that what could happen over there would happen, but it did. And my mother herself grew up under Hitler, and my grandpa was very outspoken against him to the point where they feared for his life. And I remember growing up hearing my parents' stories of what they went through during World War II and the things that led up to it. And I have to tell you, what is happening in America right now is so reminiscent. It's almost like an instant replay in some ways. Eventually, I think, as things begin to get worse and the average person here in America begins to feel the pinch, as credit dries up, they're going to look for someone to blame. And for right now, it's the federal government, but they're going to get more specific than that. They're going to look at the Federal Reserve, and they're going to see that the last two Fed chairmen have been Jewish, and some of the leaders of the big banks in New York are also Jewish. People won't look at the fact that there are even more Gentiles or people from other backgrounds involved in the same positions, but there's beginning to be an anti-Semitic focus on the Jews. It's already happening. I've seen it in the last 2 or 3 weeks increase, and that's a huge concern. And
not only
for the Jewish people, but whenever that begins, not too far behind, you have the beginnings of persecution of Christians as well. You know, just like what happened in Germany.
And you kind of say, this is one of your most current articles, and you're referencing the scapegoat issue. Of course, that caught my eye. You sent that out to a number of people, plus it's posted on your website. Because you say, I fear with 8 million Muslims now in America outnumbering the 5.7 million Jews, and with anti-Semitism on the rise among the general public, the Jewish people could once again become the scapegoat. And as you've already said, there are some Jews who are involved in all of this, far more non-Jews than Jews. But we need to find the scapegoat. And Here's what came out in, let's see, the little periodical known as Israel Today. It's very short. Just let me read it, folks, because it's backing up what we're saying. And they said, this is just yesterday, popular anti-Semitic sentiment, frighteningly reminiscent of the lead-up to Nazi rule in Germany, is growing in the United States in response to the current economic crisis, with the deflated Wall Street begging for a lifeline from Washington. Small businesses across the country unable to secure needed loans, and average Americans being turned away by mortgage banks, many people are looking for a scapegoat. And it seems the old European canards regarding malicious Jewish control of global finances are far from dead in America. Goes on to say, from popular blogs to internet forums, alternative news websites, Jews are being widely blamed for the current economic downturn in the U.S. I won't go any further than that, but that is a concern to many of us who are trying to discern what's going on here and just who's going to be picked on the most. And, you know, Gary, I think that's something that should be talked about, is who do we supposedly pick on. I know that they would love to put the blame on Wall Street, but it really goes back to about 1977 under the Carter administration, when that is when there's a particular name for the law that was passed, but basically what it means back then and now is that those who couldn't afford housing were going to be allowed to get housing, and so that's when this thing was birthed.
Yes, you're right. And ever since, debt has just gotten out of control in this country. Americans have forgotten how to save money or even to recognize that we're doing so. And then during the last 5 or 6 years, credit was almost forced on people. I mean, it got mm-hmm. so cheap and the lending practices became completely irresponsible, and people who never should have been in homes, ended up buying them, and now they have to give them up. And there's nothing worse than having something and getting a taste of it than having it taken away from you. And so people are hopping mad, and they're losing homes left and right. And home values are going to go down at least another 10 to 20%, I guarantee you, maybe a lot more than that. So people are seeing a lot of their life investment being eroded away as well. I'm talking about middle class to upper middle class people losing a lot. We have a relative, my wife's niece, we just found out she just lost $40,000. Through her 401k. Here's a family in their early 40s, very middle class. They had begun to save up a bit for retirement, and boom, a good part of it is gone. So that's happening everywhere now. And as you pull these amounts of money out of the economy, it's going to have a big effect down the road. In fact, Lehman Brothers alone, if I may go back to that for a moment, Lehman owed its creditors a staggering $613 billion. That money is gone. It just evaporated. So those entities are not ever going to be able to spend that money on the U.S. economy. If nothing else would have happened, just Lehman Brothers going down, you would have eventually from that a rise in our unemployment rate and somewhat of credit tightening. But then when you add everything else into the mix, and now credit card companies, in some cases where people had a line of credit of $15,000 or $20,000, they've just found out in the last 2 weeks that they now only have $1,000. This is happening all over the country. In fact, about 3 or 4 weeks ago, I remember hearing from a woman who had an excellent credit rating, and she went to pay her monthly credit card bill and noticed that the interest rate had just shot through the roof. And so she called the credit card company and said, did I miss a payment that I'm not aware of, or has my credit rating changed? They said, no, your credit rating is still excellent. Everything's fine. She said, well, why the rate increase then? They said, well, we did that in anticipation of you not being able to pay your bills down the road. So it's almost as if they knew something was coming a week or two before it all hit. So we are strongly urging people, by the way, to first off, off your credit cards.
Please list the things you're encouraging. That's important.
Well, first of all, get rid of any credit card debt. If you have to sell off some of your investments in order to pay down that debt and get rid of it entirely, I would strongly urge you to do so, because your rates are going to go up. And you also have to get used to somehow operating, especially I'm talking to small business people right now, you're going to have to be able to operate your small businesses with much less credit available. So you're going to have to get creative on that. I would also recommend for those people who do have the money, purchasing at least some gold and silver or other precious metals, because it could provide a short-term hedge. Now, I don't want people to go out there and go crazy with that, but I'm just saying that, you know, that can serve as a short-term hedge. Also, keeping some cash on hand, we would strongly advise that. And I'm not telling people to go out and pull out everything they have in their banks, but just keeping some cash on hand, because if things continue to go down this direction over the next few weeks and months, at some point, I believe there will be some type of a banking holiday declared where everything is shut down for a time, and people will need some cash to be able to get through, you know, a short term. In other words, your goal should be to prepare for the worst, even while hoping for the best. And always, before doing anything, I would suggest seek the Lord for guidance and then do as He leads. Pray first and then act. But we need to do something right now. I think just sitting still and not doing anything would be irresponsible when you see the handwriting on the wall the way that it is.
So do you then feel, Gary Codd, that what was implemented in recent days here and weeks, but particularly days, and granted that's going to take some time to implement, but
probably about 6 weeks or so.
Yeah, and some are saying even longer. But so, all right, then are you suggesting that the problem isn't fixed? Obviously, it isn't fixed.
No.
It is not fixed.
No, it is definitely not fixed. It's like putting your hole over a leak in a dike.
Yeah.
You know, it's buying us a little bit more time is what it's doing. That's it. The biggest problem, I believe, that our government and companies are going to face is because of the huge debt we have. We're basically a beggar nation now. We're completely at the mercy of foreign interests. And if China or Saudi Arabia and some of the Europeans decided on Monday morning not to invest in our bonds anymore, we'd be in an instant crisis, because the way we're keeping our government going right now is by borrowing money from overseas interests. And, I mean, that's been the case for a number of years already. So we don't have the money to bail out all these other interests. We're having to borrow that money, and eventually the taxpayer is going to be on the line.
Mm-hmm.
We could print the money, that's going to be hyperinflationary.
Mm-hmm.
And so more than likely the government's going to have to borrow the biggest chunk of this $700 or $800 billion that they just approved. And eventually, that's going to come home to roost. And for right now, China and the Arabs and some of the other folks overseas are willing to loan the U.S. government the money for now. But if they choose not to do that anymore, they'll have us over a barrel. And if these same interests are going to be calling for a global government, you know, how is the United States not going to go along with it? And we're going to be forced into it, especially when you consider that so many of our companies now already are foreign-owned. In the last 5 to 10 years, there has been a power grab. It's been incredible. In fact, just here in Indiana where we live, let me give you a few examples. Our water company, our water utility, is now owned by the French. It's called Veolia. In fact, I understand it's the largest owner of water utilities in the country now. So we have the French owning our water. Our brand new airport that's going to open up in 4 weeks that cost a small fortune is owned by the British. Our Indiana Toll Road is now owned by a consortium of from Australia and Spain. And the only good thing about the whole thing is right now Indiana is the only state in the Midwest that's out of debt because of the deal with the Indiana Toll Road. It gave us a lot of money quick, so at least we were able to get out of debt, but not without consequences. So much foreign ownership has come in, and that's taking place all around the country. Back in 1929, when things crashed, and going into the 1930s, America was still in charge of its own destiny, so to speak. Yes, it became a global crisis. However, you still had a lot of people living on farms. They were able to grow food. The thought of foreigners coming in and buying out our companies was unthinkable. There were laws in place that prevented that from taking place. Today, that's not the case. So when a company is weak and it's in danger of going under, rather than hundreds of people or thousands of people losing their jobs, they're going to be all too ready to receive money in large amounts from a foreign entity that will buy up a good part of that corporation. And you know, what else are they going to do? So that's the sad reality. But we dug our own hole. We put ourselves in this situation, both the people of America as well as the government, by being irresponsible and getting into debt over our ears. And, you know, it's reality now, unfortunately.
Well, I think, in course, I made a reference to the book of Revelation when we opened the program, and the Bible does predict the global financial meltdown, but this isn't it, because the Bible's financial meltdown calls for economic hardship so severe that it'll take a day's pay just to pay for some food, and that meltdown occurs somewhere in the early part of what you and I would call the tribulation, Gary. So, but, you know, this can be a little bit of, I think what this is a foreshadowing of the decline of America. And I hate to talk that way, and I know you do too, but we really don't see America in the Bible in the last days. We're not going to be, I don't believe we're going to be annihilated. I think we could suffer some extreme harm somehow from within, and possibly this is a foreshadowing of exactly that. And this certainly does play into some biblical issues that are talked about primarily in the book of Revelation. And what I believe we're seeing just a foreshadowing of that. And so I've asked Gary Kaa to come on and help us interpret it all. And, you know, Gary, I think here's just a few things that if we had a global government, and I think this will be presented to the world someday, whether it's a month or 5 years or 10 years, who knows, we could outlaw war. All human conflicts can be worked out through law. We can lower taxes globally. Collective security will cost far less than financing your nation's defense against all other countries. I can hear some of this being echoed already. The solution for global problems with a global enforced peace, we can actually defeat poverty and some other issues. We can build a truly sustainable future for our planet. So I can hear these kinds of sentiments being echoed as we speak.
Yes. In fact, in my book, In Roots of Global Occupation,
yes,
you'll remember years ago, In the back part of it, I reproduced some of the documents from an organization that I was invited to join called the World Constitution of Parliament Association.
Mm-hmm.
And back in the 80s, they put out a list of 49 reasons why we need world government. And it was almost laughable at that time. People thought this will never happen. Well, today, these are the same reasons being thrown at us for why we have to have world government. It's come full cycle. But to hear world leaders openly speaking this now gives us an idea of, you know, the hour we're living in. Really, world government would do the opposite of what they're saying. For one thing, it would put all of our eggs into one basket.
Mm-hmm.
You would lose our current system of checks and balances. If this world government, if the leaders of it turn out to be bad and want to force everything upon the people where we don't have any freedoms left, what are you going to do about it? There won't be another country left to run to hide from this world government, because it will be worldwide. So that's the first thing I have against it. It eliminates the checks and balances that I believe God began putting in place in this world at the building of the Tower of Babel. We could have had a limited or even a full-blown world government of some type way back then, but God saw that it would not be good for the people, that they would all become enslaved under one administration, so he scattered the people. And now what you have is I believe, satanic influences working behind the scenes, trying to bring the people of the world together under this facade of peace, and instead it's going to enslave them. Secondly, somehow world government has to be funded. So there would be an additional layer of taxes on top of all the taxes we already have. We would still pay municipal taxes, state taxes, federal taxes. Now we would pay international taxes on top of it all. In fact, the UN has been pushing this
right,
for years,
mm-hmm,
and getting closer and closer to getting some of these types of taxes through. France and Canada had already considered a type of income tax being paid to a global administration. It's been advocated in Congress by a couple of congressmen a few years ago. Fortunately, it was rejected at that time. But had it gone through, it would have started with each family in America paying an average of $700 a year to the UN. That was, as I said, several years ago. If it was reintroduced, I guarantee you it would be for a lot more than that. So we would pay even more taxes on things. And then you have to look at who would be in charge of this world government. And to have an idea of that, All you need to do is look at who has been pushing this over the last 10 or 20, 30 years. And it's pretty much people coming from a pantheistic worldview, strongly aligned with the New Age movement, who privately hate Bible-believing Christians, mm-hmm. can't stand Jews or the nation Israel. They would literally eat us alive if they could. And to have those kinds of people now in charge of a world government, where do you suppose that will lead? If you read the Bible and study it, we know ultimately you're going to have a figure referred to in Scripture as the Antichrist or the Lawless One, the Beast, ruling, and we know what's going to happen. So you would have to be an extremely foolish person to want to support this type of a system and want it to come into place. Yet having said all that, we know from Scripture right. that eventually it will happen. And that's why as these things begin to unfold, we do need to know what we believe and why we believe it. And I wrote in our newsletter, and I strongly urge this, we need to get on God's agenda and use this time to draw near to Jesus and be in step with his will. Get your priorities straight. Remove time-consuming, non-bearing clutter from your life and choose to be an instrument of God. Be committed and dedicated to his call on your life. This is what needs to be important right now, drawing near to Christ. And I know, Jan, with your program, and may the Lord bless you, because you're one of the few programs out there willing to talk about these kinds of things and helping to prepare the body of Christ. But we need right now discernment more than anything. And also, though, in the process of trying to be discerning and being well-informed, we cannot lose our love for the unsaved. And that is so important, and I know you hit on that, too. We've got to be living out our lives for Christ publicly in every way possible, taking a bold stand for him while at the same time loving the sinner and trying to draw them to Christ. And I think this is going to be an incredible opportunity in the months ahead as people begin to see things happening around the world. Maybe one last opportunity for Christians to help lead their unsaved loved ones to Christ. And that's our main focus in our ministry, trying to keep people up to date on these things and then using them as a tool to help draw people to Christ.
And I'm glad you mentioned that issue of the man with a plan. I mean, because this could morph into the call for a man with a plan. You know, this Mr. Fix-It, who's going to come along someday. We don't know when. And the Bible calls him the Antichrist. And who knows? I mean, I believe this is setting the stage for such a thing. We don't fully know where all of this is going. But as we opened up, and as you clarified, Gary, what we have done, what America has done in the last week or two, is put a Band-Aid on a cancer sore. So things are not really rosy and glowing in any degree here.
No, people are just breathing a collective sigh of relief for a short while. Because it dealt with this immediate crisis, kind of. But there's a lot more where this is coming from. And I think Wall Street understands that, too. That's why the stock market went down 157 points yesterday in spite mm-hmm. of Congress approving it. Because there are other banks that are tipsy, and possibly as many as 120 or 130. And I just want to comment briefly on the FDIC.
Yes, please do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of people are not aware of how much money the FDIC holds in its reserves. It's about $45 billion. And if they absolutely had to, they could tap into the Treasury Department for about another $30 billion. So in a worst-case scenario, they would have about $75 billion available. So to put that into perspective, do you remember when IndyMac Bank went under, I think it was in June, out in California?
Mm-hmm.
The FDIC went through $9 billion with that bank going down. That was a medium to big size bank. So if there's a total availability of $75 billion and you had eight or nine medium to large size banks go under, that would wipe out the FDIC. I'm not saying that will happen, but I'm saying that fund, too, is limited. It's not, there's a bottom to it. And so if you have 120 banks of various sizes that, wouldn't take a whole lot for them to go, then what the government would have to do to back up the FDIC, they would have to start printing lots of money or borrow a lot more money from overseas. And so as this thing unfolds, we're taking it a step at a time. It's already a severe crisis, but we're not feeling the full impact of it yet. 6 weeks or 8 weeks down the road, I believe unemployment will continue to go up. People are going to be buying less over the holidays. So we're going to see this more and more unfold and more banks being troubled. And unfortunately, and I know this sounds very pessimistic, and it is, but when you understand the overall agenda of where the powers that be would like to take the world, being ultimately global government in a new world financial system, I believe that things have to get pretty bad here mm-hmm. in America before the American people are going to be willing to go along with something like that. And I believe the top globalists understand that. And that's why I'm not pulling punches here. I'm telling people I believe it's going to get pretty bad in this country, and that's why we need to get ready now while we still can and be a step ahead, both financially speaking, and also I believe the Lord's giving us this time spiritually to be prepared and to toughen up for His sake.
Yeah, I think Americans have been guilty of a sense of almost invincibility, and because of our financial, well, let's say prowess, our technological advantages, our military dominance, and I could go on. I think the last few weeks are proving that all to be a misconception, that is, this sense of invincibility that Americans have. I think we are witnessing, as I speak, the rapid decline of America. And I know it breaks my heart to say that, but I believe that is a reality. And you say, Gary, and actually, you've already said this. I'm actually just repeating what you have said because it needs repeating. And that is, the government has three options. It can raise our taxes in order to pay for those bailouts, which would extract money from the economy at a time when it needs more. It could print more currency, which would lead to hyperinflation and eventual collapse. Or it could borrow even more from foreign entities if they were willing to loan us the money. There should be an underline there, if they're willing to loan us the money. And this last option would further increase our colossal debt. And then you conclude, the fact is our government is almost as broke as the institutions it is trying to assist. It is in no position to help. The obvious next question is, who will bail out the U.S. government when it goes broke? Gary, do you have an answer for that question?
As I said, I believe they will propose a brand new system.
Yeah.
And I would not be surprised if and when that time comes, if you have an individual step on the scene that seems to have all the answers, one of those answers could be, and I'm just speculating, I'm not saying this is going to happen, but one of the answers could be declaring some type of global jubilee or debt cancellation across the board to give the world a fresh start. I think it's going to be something drastic for people to go along with it, and it's going to sound very good. And again, for Satan to get people to go along with something like this, he had to get them in debt up to their eyeballs. And America is in that spot right now. I saw a statistic, it's been a few months now already, but if you take our total indebtedness as a nation, I believe it's well over $50,000 for every man, woman, and child right now. So when a child is born, the moment they're born, they inherit an incredible amount of debt, and it's growing exponentially. And it can't continue to go on. Right now, our only way out, if we wanted to remain a sovereign nation, and not come in under the influence of the emerging global system, we would have to cut our government instantly by at least one-third. We'd have to go back to nothing more than being able to defend our borders, building streets and dams, and a little bit beyond that. But, I mean, just the very, very basics.
That's not going to happen.
And that's not going to happen. You know it, and I know it. But if it did, we could actually carry this debt and pay it off over maybe the next 30 to 40 years. It'd be real tough, but it could be done. But we're talking about those kinds of drastic measures. Anything less isn't going to cut it. It's going to keep going downhill because we're going to have to keep borrowing more money from foreigners or print our own currency just to drag things out a little bit further, and it just can't keep going on indefinitely like that.